ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Dr. Ann Jones here. I've been out and about recording nature sounds, but nature doesn't always oblige. For example, this wombat, yes, you, thought that my recorder was the perfect place to scratch its butt. So to find out what else that wombat got up to one night near Canberra, subscribe to Nature Sounds by Ann Jones on ABC Listen, on podcast apps, and also on the Wombat Butt Scratching Thumbs Up list.
This week, the Reserve Bank cut its forecast for inflation. It has the underlying rate lower than it was going to be in the year to December, the year to June, and the year to the next June. But
we think the risks are skewed to the upside on inflation.
The bank doesn't quite believe its forecasts. The governor, Michelle Bullock, said she wouldn't be surprised if inflation stays high and she has to push up rates once again.
The board is prepared to raise.
As the governor tells it, right now, getting inflation down is her number one priority. And she's prepared to wear higher unemployment, more people out of jobs. She's forecasting higher unemployment to do it. And she can do that with a far greater degree of confidence than in the past. She's surveyed 9,000 of us and found that when it comes to fighting either inflation or unemployment, an overwhelming majority of us, two-thirds, will pick inflation any day. If it sounds as if we're callous, more concerned about prices than keeping people in jobs, maybe we are. Is there any other way to see it? Welcome to The Economy Stupid on ABC Radio National with me, Peter Martin, and someone who's been digging deeply into what really matters to us and why, whether it's inflation, unemployment, wages or something else, Gianni LaCava, who's a former senior research manager at the Reserve Bank and is now director of research at the E61 Institute, and Sherelle Murphy, the Oceania chief economist for EY, who has also worked at the Reserve Bank and now tracks what it does as part of her job. Welcome, Gianni, and welcome back, Sherelle.
Thanks for having me back, Peter.
Thanks, Peter. Lovely to be here.
Sherelle, how do you read what the governor had to say this week on Tuesday?
It was definitely a pause, not a pivot. So, in other words, I would read it as a hawkish pause.
Hang on, you better explain that term, hawkish.
Hawkish being a concern about inflation being too high, essentially.
So we've got hawks. And we've got doves, and she was more like hawkish.
Definitely more hawkish, yeah.
Concerned maybe she'd have to push up rates, even though her forecasts had inflation coming down faster than her previous forecast 3 months ago.
Coming down faster, perhaps, in the short term, but it's still an 18-month proposition before we get inflation back into the target band, of which is, of course, 2 to 3%. So it's not a comfortable outlook, whichever way you put it, even though it might be slightly better than it was back in May. And of course, part of the reason the forecasts in the short term are better is because inflation actually did come in better than expected in June. So as they've updated their forecast, they've had to take that into account.
Well, they forecast 4.8. They got 3.8. I'd say that was a big miss and a lot better.
Certainly is a lot better, but that's headline. And the underlying number, which we know is more important to the Reserve Bank, is still sitting at 3.6%, or at least it was in the year to the June quarter, after sitting at 3.5 in the year to the March quarter. And, you know, that's a high number and it's going in the wrong direction.
Well, it's going down.
Well,
forecast to go down.
Forecast to go down, but underlying inflation so far has not done that.
She seemed to not believe her own forecasts, or rather she said there are uncertainties, and the uncertainties, she said, are tilted. I think skewed was her word, in one direction. There are a lot of things that could go wrong.
Yeah, it was interesting because you could almost have issued that same statement but with a rate hike in it, because there were so many upside risks to inflation that were highlighted, all of which we agree with, which is one of the reasons that we were, I think, perhaps the only forecasters in the market just at the margin expecting a rate hike. But I think that all the reasons that we were concerned and, you know, that justify what I think eventually will become a rate hike were there. They were in the statement. They were in the governor's press conference. And she's clearly not comfortable and said that personally she thought there might need to be a rate hike later in the year.
These were the war in the Middle East and no sign of relief on petrol prices.
Yep. Ongoing capacity pressures in the domestic economy, weak productivity growth, a labour market which is still a little bit on the tight side, although it has certainly loosened up a little. In other words, it's not growing as strongly as it had been, but it's still a potential source of inflation. Plus, then we've got new things to be considered, such as the speed at which data centres are being built and the constraints, particularly in the construction sector.
Against that, though, our spending on housing is going down. The bank was forecasting growth in housing investment of 2% this year. It's now forecasting 0.7%, partly because of the budget, partly because of what it's been doing to interest rates. Gianni, why do you think the governor was so determined at her press conference to indicate she was very concerned about high inflation, even though her forecasts were adjusted down? She even said that the meeting considered an increase. Is this sort of part of a strategy? I'm not necessarily asking you to tell stories out of school, but the governors like to talk tough while enjoying, I suppose, the fruits of success, things moving in the right direction.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a strategy, but I think the RBA is clearly very concerned that inflation will be higher and more persistent than they are currently forecasting.
They're forecasting something, but they're saying they don't
fully believe it. Yeah, and this can happen. I mean, I think there's a couple of things that they can do about that. So one thing is that they could have raised interest rates to try and get inflation back down. They chose not to do that this month. The other thing that they can do, which you flagged, is that they can try and talk down inflation. And I think it's interesting. It's what some people call jawboning or even open mouth operations, that you use speeches and statements.
That sounds awful. Open mouth operation.
It is. Open mouth operation. But you use speeches and these things as a second kind of policy tool, policy lever to try and manage the economy. It's more sort of art than science. But the idea is that, yeah, if you can get people to believe that inflation's coming down, they come to expect that it's coming down. So, you know, as business managers and owners, you might think your costs are going to come down, so you decide not to put up your prices as much, and it can actually become like a self-fulfilling thing. And what's interesting is that it's a less costly way of bringing down inflation, if it works, than raising interest rates and potentially putting up unemployment. So we'll have to wait and see if it's actually a strategy that works.
Do you think that's what the governor's doing? Partly open-mouth operation. Sherelle, you also work there, of course.
Yeah, I think they always are kind of doing a little bit of this, but I do believe that the governor thinks that there is a lot of reason why you might need to see another rate hike later in the year. So I don't think that that's just bluff, if you like. I think she genuinely does believe that. It's really just a question from here of whether the sort of handbrake has been pulled enough on the economy, or whether it's going to need a little bit more. Our suspicion is it's going to need a little bit more, unfortunately.
She might have been excused for having a spring in her step as she talked tough at this week's press conference. She carried with her a tool she didn't have before or hadn't made public before. It was an insight into the way we think, an insight that seems to suggest that most of us have only one overriding economic concern. It's that insight we're about to consider here on The Economy is Stupid on ABC Radio National with me, Peter Martin, joined this week by Reserve Bank watchers and former Reserve Bank staffers Sherelle Murphy and Gianni LaCava. Gianni, the bank has just published a survey of 9,000 Australians, three waves of 3,000, entitled Listening to Australians. Among other things, it asked us to list in order our most pressing economic concerns. The ultra-clear, overwhelming finding is that only one concern really matters to us when asked. Whatever our age, whatever our income, whatever our living arrangements, one concern, inflation. Two-thirds of those surveyed said it was one of their top three concerns. Less than one third listed employment or wages. Very few listed immigration. Only one in five listed climate change. Only two in five listed housing. You've just published your own separate statistical examination of what's driven those really big falls in consumer confidence, both here and in the United States. What did you find?
So I found that when Australians are responding to these surveys, they have one thing on their mind, and that is inflation. And it's not just the recent events, not just what cost of living's been doing recently, but looking over 30-odd years, inflation is the one economic variable that came across my statistical analysis as being most correlated with people's sentiment.
You said going across 30 years, that doesn't quite take us back to when unemployment was really high, but it certainly takes us back to when there was a memory of 11% unemployment. And even then, you found we were far more concerned about prices, the prices we'd pay, than the risk of us or someone else not being able to find work.
Yeah, my own analysis surprised me a lot. I was like, that just can't be right. I had to go back and keep checking it again and again. I was like, surely inflation is not the thing that people are really responding to. Surely it's things like unemployment, their own incomes, mortgage interest rates. But I just found that those factors matter a little bit, but not as much as inflation. That was just, a big shock for me. I think the RBA now knows that and they can see that in their own surveys. But yeah, I was quite surprised.
Is it just inflation or is it sort of more complicated? That is to say that if inflation jumped, it did jump as we came out of COVID, does that dent consumer confidence or does consumer confidence sort of get dented the longer prices rise and stay high?
Yeah, it's a really good point. Yeah, my analysis suggests it's not just when you see a temporary spike in inflation, say petrol prices go up this month, that won't necessarily have an impact on consumer sentiment. But what you see is that when the cost of living is sort of, the pressures are building, they're broadening out beyond petrol to food and all sorts of things. As you see sort of build over time and they gradually eat away at your back pocket, that's when people start to feel it. And that also means that even if inflation was to slow, it's probably going to be some time before people start to feel confident again.
It's like a one-way thing almost. Pushing inflation up will make things worse. Yeah. Bringing it down won't necessarily make it better.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think, if I can just jump in there, I think, you know, this kind of cozy lives problem that we've been experiencing.
Sorry, cozy lives.
Cost of living is something that we've been dealing with since 2022 now. So it's kind of 4 years in, and as you rightly said, it doesn't go backwards. It just gets worse and worse and worse. And so in some ways, the more time that we live with higher inflation, and therefore the more the level of prices has increased, the more it bites.
Why might it be, Sherelle, that this one goal matters more to us than the other? And I ask that because the Reserve Bank itself, in its act these days, its new act, is given two goals. One is price stability, that's inflation. The other is full employment, that's keeping people in jobs. Why should one of those? Do you have any idea? Gianni is gobsmacked. I'm gobsmacked. Why one of those should matter so much more to us than the other?
I think it's temporal, to be honest. I do think that this is just more a reflection of the problem that we're dealing with right now. Unemployment is essentially not a problem in Australia at the moment. We've got close to full employment. So that's obviously varied a little bit, and maybe we're in a sort of a path where things are not quite as good for the labour market. But the unemployment rate in Australia has been below 6.5% now for, apart from that sort of brief spike during COVID, for about 30 years, which means that a lot of people who are in the labour force now,
they don't even remember.
No, they don't. And it's almost like a problem that this sort of contemporary generation of workers has not had to contend with, which interestingly for me is jarring as well, because when I arrived in Australia as a migrant just about to start high school, I remember unemployment even as a 12-year-old being a problem. In fact, it's one of the reasons I wanted to become an economist, is because I just could see how damaging unemployment can be to individuals and how much it can kind of really drain their confidence and just eat away at their own sort of sense of self-worth and happiness.
There's something really weird, though, in the detail of what the Reserve Bank found. If it's just what you call temporal, just a memory, You'd think that older people would be more concerned about unemployment than younger people, but it's the other way around. Those over 60, only 10% of them are worried about unemployment. Those in their 40s and 50s, only 30%. It's 40% for those in their 20s. It's almost the other way around.
Well, if you're kind of in your 60s, you're probably not that concerned about working so much as you might have been in the past. Not to say, of course, that there's not a lot of 60-somethings in the labour market, but it's not something that's an absolute determinant, I guess, of your household income for the rest of, the next decade ahead.
And when you're young, particularly if you're about to enter the jobs market, that really matters to you, I suppose.
Absolutely.
It matters for the rest of your life, really.
That's right, yeah. And the other thing to consider here is the fact that the forecasters across the market, including the Reserve Bank and the Treasury, both have unemployment forecasts which are quite low for some time into the future.
Yeah, the Reserve Bank's forecasting an increase, but still below 5%.
Still below 5%. So in other words, even the sort of policymakers are not saying this is a problem that you really have to worry about in the short term.
Do we know, Gianni, what people used to think back when unemployment was high, really high, when it hit 11% in the 1990s, at the start of the 1990s?
Yeah, so back in 1993, unemployment was the top economic concern.
Was? How do you know that?
Yeah, we know that from, there's an Australian election study that asks voters, I think every election since 1990, which are the economic issues that matter the most to you in deciding your vote. And back then, the survey didn't even include a cost of living category because I guess it just wasn't sort of on people's radars at the time. But I think, yeah, that's kind of changed. As Sherelle says, it's partly a temporal thing. It's interesting that they dropped the unemployment question after the GFC.
Well, we don't even ask it now.
Don't even ask about it anymore. So I think that tells you something about maybe where people's mindsets are.
And we now do ask about cost of living. So the Australian election survey, if you like, was following public concerns. It stopped asking about unemployment. It started to ask about the cost of living. Does this mean that if unemployment did come roaring back, if it jumped to 10%, to 7%, to 11% again, do you think our concerns would suddenly change?
Yeah, I think that would definitely happen. That's what history tells you. Back in the 90s, when we had a recession, that's the one thing that people were concerned about. If unemployment was to go up and it was to hit enough people, then I definitely think it's going to be back on people's radars pretty quickly.
You found something else, Gianni, that's sort of odd looking back in history. We're obsessed with inflation, or relatively obsessed with inflation and prices now. But back in the days when inflation was really high, in the 1970s, it hit 17% under Gough Whitlam, 14% under Malcolm Fraser. You found that it had less effect on confidence then than it does today. Why on earth should we be more concerned about inflation now than we were back when it was really frightening, really menacing?
Yeah, geez, Pete, I don't have to keep questioning my results. But yeah, no, I questioned it myself. I didn't actually believe it as well when I looked at it. I mean, when you compare what we're seeing now with inflation to what happened during those oil crises of the 1970s, and inflation today, as you say, doesn't even compare. It was close to 20% then. But, events that happened about 50 years ago, as Sherelle was sort of saying, it's maybe not the benchmark that households today have in mind. They've lived for two decades in a sort of low, stable inflation regime. We've got used to low inflation. So when you do see a double of inflation from, say, 3% to 6%, that really sort of hits home. And in some sense, it's a bigger shock. So maybe the surveys just aren't covering enough people that lived and worked through the 1970s. I mean, I think Sherelle and I are too young to remember that, Peter, but I don't know about yourself. But I think it's interesting, but I think people sort of forgotten kind of what it was like back then. And also, I think it wasn't a different time. We had things like wage indexation at that time. So, wages were rising a little bit to compensate for the higher inflation during the 70s. So
they were adjusted every quarter, actually, because inflation, 20% inflation,
exactly.
You needed a 5% adjustment per quarter.
So we were talking about before, about the persistent hit to your back pocket, maybe it didn't hurt as much back then because wages were adjusting, but I am sort of just speculating.
I also wonder to what extent inflation is more frustrating for households because it's sort of a loss of control. It's outside of their control. You can't really do much about the petrol price that you see on the board every day or the insurance premiums that come through your door. Whereas maybe employment feels a little bit more like something you can do something about. You know, if you kind of, you know, put those extra applications and you're perhaps willing to take a different job, you can maybe kind of find yourself some employment. But inflation, really, there's not much you can do about it.
I don't know if you do your own shopping, Sherelle. I do. And
I'm an expert shopper, Peter. I'm very good at it.
Even being an expert didn't help me in 2022, 2023. I would go into the supermarket, any supermarket, and see prices that looked as if they'd increased 50%. Probably hadn't, but, you know, that was when you sort of rounded. That's what you got, and felt completely powerless to do anything. I couldn't shop anywhere else. It wouldn't make any difference.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it's quite frightening, right, when you see your insurance premiums come in the door at the moment. And, you know, yes, you can maybe shop around a little bit, but essentially there's not much you can do about it.
Does this finding that inflation, which certainly surprised two of us, matters far more than anything else, does it have implications for the Reserve Bank? It's got two targets, price stability, full employment. Now it knows what the public wants. It called its survey Listening to Australians. It appears the public want it to go all out to achieve one goal, crushing inflation, and not to worry anything like as much as the other goal. Might this be how its thinking is developing?
No, I don't think so. The bank, you know, understands that inflation is the sort of dominant concern at the moment, but also understands that if employment rose materially, then, you know, public concerns would change very quickly, as Gianni just was talking about before. And history kind of tells us that. And I think the dual mandate recognizes that. At times like this in the current period where inflation is above target, the focus is naturally on inflation. But during crises, maybe like COVID or the GFC, preserving jobs becomes the dominant objective. And I don't think the bank is choosing one objective over the other. It's always got to balance the two to a large extent.
Gianni, what did happen during COVID? You were there. You weren't in the part of the bank that set interest rates, but you were there. What was the attitude when unemployment started to rise and looked as if it would rise a long way?
Yeah, I'm just reflecting on my time at the RBA and not being able to speak on behalf of the RBA staff, but I always felt there was a tension between sticking to a kind of clear inflation targeting framework in normal times. So when you're producing forecasts of where the economy is going to be in the next couple of years, you're setting interest rates to manage those forecasts. But then a big crisis hits like COVID, and it's not that you throw that sort of framework out the window, but you do suddenly become way more worried about, you know, people losing their jobs, businesses going under, pensioners, other benefit recipients not getting their money, the banks getting into trouble. You were seeing what was happening in the US, really scary things coming out of, you know, the payroll numbers were going crazy. And we were thinking, oh, this is going to, you know, come straight to Australia. We're going to see 10, 20% of unemployment. And the priority is very much keeping unemployment low. And not just because of the impact it has on the affected people and their families, but also we know that unemployment has bad spillovers to other things. We know it's associated with worse health outcomes, you know, with higher rates of crime and all sorts of bad social outcomes. So I think it's definitely front of mind when you have a big shock like that, that unemployment, keeping it low, is an absolute priority.
Sherelle, might politicians take a message from this? During COVID, the coalition spent big, really big, to push unemployment down, keep unemployment down, and it kept spending to push it to the lowest in half a century. It wasn't thanked for that. It lost office, and it was blamed for the inflation that followed. Might this new knowledge about what really matters to Australians, might that make governments less keen to prioritise employment in the future and keener than they have been to do everything they can to keep prices under control?
Again, I don't think so. I think it's just because it's a relative concept, which inflation sort of hurts now. In the past, there's been periods where unemployment hurts more. We got an unemployment rate, I think it's around about 7.5% at the peak in COVID. You know, as Gianni said, there was expectations from some of the best forecasters in the country that that could have been as high as 20%. And the reality is that had the policy response not been as it was, it could have been 20%. That is a very different economy. That is, as Gianni says, it's social problems, it's crime, it's desperation, and probably something that would have lasted some time as well. So it's always the problem of economics. There's not a petri dish where you can kind of like play with some of these variables and see what the counterfactual is. We don't know, but what we, I guess, do know is that it would have been far worse had the government not jumped in. And I think the government's incredibly aware of that. So it might not have been thanked electorally, but the sort of ongoing problems in the economy, which would have been genuinely painful for many, many Australians, were probably avoided.
You're giving me faith in the government and the Reserve Bank. Thank you, both of you, Gianni and Sherelle. Before we go, as is traditional on the program, anything to look out for? You probably have a number of things at E61. Gianni?
I'm actually going to be a bit of a broken record on this. I think I mentioned this the last time. I'm watching the housing market. I think it's still a bit too early to see what impact the changes in capital gains tax and negative gearing from the federal budget is going to have on the housing market, particularly like home sales, prices. There's early signs of a bit of a downturn, but how bad that gets, we just don't know yet. So I'm going to be watching that over the coming weeks and months.
Or should we say how good that is for someone trying
That's
to
true.
Buy? How bad for sellers?
It's usually a good indicator of where the economy more generally is going, though. So, but you are right. That it depends who you talk to.
Sherelle?
I'm quite interested in the data center boom that's going on at the moment. I think that's something that we're going to be watching really closely because it is one of those parts of the economy which is genuinely doing well from a demand point of view. But of course, it also brings pressures with it and potentially capacity constraints, which can be problematic and possibly inflationary. And secondly, if I can just throw it in, I'm also looking forward to a breakfast at the National Press Club, which is coming up on the 25th of September, which it's a launch of a book called Power in Numbers, Australian Women in Economics. It's been written by Melissa Bray and Katie Bradbear, and they are going to sort of highlight and showcase some of the brilliant women that we have in economics in Australia. So that'll be a good one too.
It's a wonderful thing. You've got the head of the Reserve Bank, the head of the Treasury, the head of the Competition and Consumer Commission, the head of the Securities and Investments Commission, the head of the Department of Defence, all women. I don't know about you, but I can't remember anything like that.
Correct. Yes, no, it's great. And I think the important part is that this proves not to be sort of an aberration in history and that we actually continue to have more even representation between the genders at that leadership level of economics.
Sherelle Murphy, who dived into economics because of a recession quite a while ago now.
Too long ago.
Oceana Chief Economist for EY and also a former staffer for the Reserve Bank. And Gianni Licava, Research Director at the E61 Institute. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us, Peter.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And thank you for listening. You can find our episodes on the ABC Listen app or live on ABC Radio National Thursdays. If you have any thoughts or questions or comments, no economic question is stupid, you can email us. Mel writes, I love your podcast. I'm glad to finally realise that economics, being rather than a dusty maths exercise, is actually the wonderful cradle for holding all the best ideas society could wish for. Mel's question, why can't she get access to her super early? Then she could pay off her mortgage. She'd be in a better position to support her 17-year-old son, who listens, hello and thank you, and her 82-year-old father. Why can't people like her, single parents supporting both generations at once, get their super early when they need it the most? A very good question, Mel. Gianni earlier mentioned the early superannuation access during COVID. People could get $20,000 and millions of Australians jumped at the chance. A really good question, one I would like to return to. The whole point of super, though, is to take money away from people to enable them to use it at another time, which, as you said, may not actually be the best time for it. Thank you, Mel, and thank you, Mel's son. Thanks to producer Sam Carmody. I'm Peter Martin. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.